Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. Check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code UNDERMINE for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code UNDERMINE for 20% off your order. Farmer-owned, Vermont-grown, Sunset Lake CBD. Hey listeners, I want to tell you about Music Masters Collective, a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. These events give you the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like the Fab Four, Steve Earle, Richard Thompson, John Scofield, Nels Klein, the Milk Carton Kids, and many more. This June, join the Wait Band, featuring members of the band and the Levon Helm Band with special guests, including Jimmy Vivino, Bob Margolin, Lost Leaders, Chris O'Leary, Cindy Cashdollar, Stony Creek Band, Rob Fraboni, Larry Packer, and so many more at Camp Cripple Creek. This all-inclusive music vacation in the Catskill Mountains of upstate New York promises to be a once-in-a-lifetime experience featuring performances, workshops, jams, comfortable lodging, and superb dining. Visit campcripplecreek.com/undermine to register today. That's campcripplecreek.com/undermine.
Osiris.
I always make it seem like I'm pressing some important button right before we start. But I'm not. There's no important buttons. Hello and welcome to Undermine. I hope you all filled up your DeLoreans with just enough gas to join us for the next 30 minutes or so, because we're going back to a historic night, not just for fish fans, but for anyone who counts their days by the Gregorian calendar. Because tonight, we're going to New Year's Eve, 1997. Hong Kong was handed over to China from British rule, and oh yeah, fish finalized their destroying of America.
I'm proud of us that we're not doing this part of season four on the actual anniversary, because that would make too much sense and it would make everyone understand what's happening.
Well, you know, RJ, I think we're just, I guess you could say we're taking our cue from fish, because they celebrated New Year's Eve 2021 in April of 2022. And we also are having a whale of a time, I might add.
Oh no, are those dad jokes again? You just heard from my co-hosts, RJB and Benji Eisen. I guess this is an inverted introduction, because this is Undermine and I'm your host, Tom Marshall.
That's true.
I'm not sure about that.
Well, I am. But happy that we can just dive right on in with this one. And we've got three sets to cover and an utter ball to consider. For context, this is just Fish's second time playing the Garden on New Year's Eve itself. So even though now it's a tradition all the time, I was just excited about the idea that this could even become a tradition. So let's get right into it. I'm going to choose Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe, Benji.
Okay, well, let's talk about this night by first saying last night, 12:30, had that AC/DC badge that we said gave the Hampton badge a run for the money. And then on this show, New Year's Eve, it opens with Emotional Rescue, which also it debuted at Hampton, which was a month prior. So this is the second Emotional Rescue, and this one jams. Once it goes around the track, it suddenly becomes like a 97 style funk workhorse immediately, in a way that it wasn't back out, you know, when they they broke it out at Hampton in a way that makes me wish now that they did it more, especially in that Cal Funk era. And then here after, you know, after they go into the jam, it segues into Yamar, which is a song that was perhaps, in my opinion, best enjoyed when they served it with the side of Cal Funk. RJ, what's your thoughts on this opening frame here?
I mean, I remember getting the tapes again, and I got to say, I mentioned maybe when we were talking about 1228 that I had the biggest regret about this show. My friend Chris, who I grew up with, I sold my ticket to him. It was a 10th row floor ticket back when they had seats on the floor of MSG. And the reason I sold it to him is because I didn't have tickets for the other shows and I was 18. And I was like, I don't know if I can just go to New York by myself with one ticket. And I could have been 10th row in the middle. And looking back as an 18-year-old, like, of course I could have gone to New York and gone to a show. And in fact, I decided to go to Long Island, New York 4 months later as an 18 or 19-year-old. And it worked out perfectly. So I should have gone, but I got the tapes, and getting a 3-set show in the mail is always, you know, special. But I do think this whole, maybe my highlight of the entire show is this emotional rescue. It just is. It's so fun. I mean, it's so, the lyrics are ridiculous, you know, the vocals anyway, but the vocals and the lyrics, both ridiculous, but such a great way to start one of these big shows. And I think this first set, like, it flows really well. There's not like a lot of extended jamming, but you know, they're keeping these sets kind of tight because it's New Year's Eve, but I really love this, this opener into Yamar, which is another fun one just to keep it light and keep it moving on New Year's Eve.
Hey listeners, I want to tell you about one of our great partners, DistroKid. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads and artists keeping 100% of their royalties and earnings. If you're a musician and looking to get your music out there, DistroKid is the way to go. DistroKid is available for iOS and Android and is now available in Apple's App Store and the Google Play Store. More than a million artists rely on DistroKid to get their music onto Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all other major streaming services. And with DistroKid, you can upload new releases, see your financial progress, get notified when you've earned royalties, withdraw money from the app, view and share links, check your streaming stats, and a whole lot more. DistroKid has more features than any other music distributor. Check them out today. Go to distrokid.com, that's DistroKid with a capital K.com/VIP/undermine for a special offer only for our listeners. That's DistroKid, capital K, .com/VIP/undermine. Thanks, DistroKid. Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of 8 cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
RJ, I think maybe I am rubbing off on you because that was a Benji-style answer. It had some, you know, some references and some teases and some callbacks and, you know, as it went down the set. And so I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Hey, Tom, before we move on to the next set, I have two questions for you.
Let me just save time. I can just answer them right now. Yes. Is question one, and yogurt, granola, almond milk, a banana, and a little cranberry juice.
Well, you nailed them, but I got two more for you then. So the first one is, you know, Limb by Limb. Like, did you write the lyrics for Limb by Limb before Trey came up with the music, or was this one of your, you know, mince and match pairings?
So Scott Herman and I wrote the back and forth, the never want my hand cut off part. Well, we were supposed to be working at AT&T. So long before Trey and I turned it into a song, we did that via email. We were across a large floor of cubicles from each other, and we'd lapse into long sessions of mutual poetry, using the term loosely, writing stuff like this in Cavern, for example. But fast forward to the actual writing session with Trey in Stowe, probably in 96, where we were finally writing and recording Limb by Limb in demo form for the first time. And he and I wrote the intro together, the shoulder that I lean on part. And then we sang the back and forth lyrics that Paige and he sing on stage. Lastly, there's like this, people always ask me about this drum part. It's like the amazing drum beat. Is Trey playing that? Because they hear the demo version on Trampled by Lambs and Pecked by the Dove. And it's a stunning, difficult drum beat. And no, Trey had recorded it or composed it on a drum machine. And he brought that ahead of time. So that beautiful beat. What was your second question?
My second question is about the next song of the set, which is The Horse. And it's a question about the original lyrics for that. Who was Matilda?
Matilda is a character in a song that we wrote a long time ago. It's actually called Matilda. And it has extremely rude lyrics. And, you know, I think maybe the statute of limitations is over on being embarrassed about rude lyrics. I'm going to ask Trey if it's cool for me to finally put that out on my SoundCloud. Check out Thunderburn, B-U-R-N, Thunderburn on SoundCloud. And I'll add Matilda to that if I get the thumbs up, because we're beyond embarrassment now. And speaking of that, it might be a good time to go to break. Do you guys agree?
I don't know how, speaking of what, but yes.
Embarrassment. All right.
And corporate greed.
We're going to break. Thank you for joining us, everybody. I'm still Tom Marshall. This is Still Undermined. And my co-hosts are still RJB and Benji Eisen. We've got two sets plus a New Year's gag to cover. This second set on paper looks like a Mike's Groove sandwich after a set opening timber. RJ, please walk us through it.
So I mentioned during the set one discussion, the sets are a little bit short. This was about 60 minutes or so, but really packed and you know, kind of a breather in the middle there. But the timber gets things moving, which is, you know, I first saw Timber in 97, I think, and it would just, it kind of freaked me out, you know, like I feel like that was in the 90s when I saw Timber. It just is such a nice way to create a really strange atmosphere for a set. And this is like the perfect setup for what is a really, really good Mike's that goes into, according to Fishnet, not a segue, but Mike's and then Piper into Circus Comes, into Roses Are Free, into Weegabog. It's a fun set. My only question is why they played Roses Are Free for 5 minutes in between Circus Comes and Weegabog, but that's you know, beyond my ability to understand. But this is it's a fun set. I think capped by this closer, the Weegabog, that sends everyone back to the drawing board for set three. But I really like this Mike song. I don't know if you guys have thoughts on this set, but it's a fun one in the middle here.
Benji, you know, we talked the other day about how New Year's Eve shows aren't always the strongest of the run. And we definitely know that RJ's vote is the previous night, 12:30. But halfway through this 12:31, what's your thought?
Well, you know, Tom, I really liked this night. And in fact, I had forgotten just how much I liked it. Because, okay, so 12:29 and 12:30 are both on Live Fish. And so I listen to them, you know, I'd say periodically and probably will continue to do so probably for the rest of my life, you know. And then 12:28 isn't a show that I found myself wanting to listen to a whole lot once we migrated from the CDRs to streaming. I just haven't gone back until this past week when we did it, and it holds up. It's a great second set, but you know, if you wanted to stream, or if you want to, I should say, stream New Year's Eve 97, the show we're talking about today, obviously, you have to go to ReListen or archive.org, or you have to have it on your hard drive, or, you know, otherwise get an audience taped download. The soundboard is to this day still under lock and key. And usually that means these days that I'm not listening to it, you know, just out of, because there's so many great sound, you know, shows out there with amazing sound that's been prepared and remixed and remastered. So, you know, there's so many to choose from. So I don't really go off the path that much anymore. But holy shit, guys, this show smokes. And for a New Year's Eve show, especially, because oftentimes for New Year's Eve, the first set feels like a very much of a first set feel to it. The second set feels like them being nervous about something, and they know something we don't know. So there's this nervous energy. Sometimes that means that they play like a song like Piper a little bit faster, and then they do the 6 minute Roses Are Free type things, you know, because they have a lot and they're doing these great songs, but you can tell that there's an apex to the set that they know that we don't, you know. And then the third set, you know, and that answer takes us into set three. So like many New Year's Eve shows, set three is kind of a you had to be there kind of set, you know, because the gag happens and then afterwards things are going around, you know, and it's kind of, it either plays into the gag or else it is blowing steam off after, you know, immediately having the gag, both for the band and the audience, which is why when you're there, everyone is very much on the same page and it's a celebration. But here for this night, you know, there's the gag. Tom, do you remember the gag?
It's funny you phrased it that way, because I did over party the night before. Is a rookie move, you know, you party on New Year's, you don't party the night before. But because I had done my stage performance on the 30th, so I get so nervous and worked up before those. I think I had I had to work off some energy, and I just did New York City that night and never slept. And that said, I was not in the best shape. I think I woke up like right before the show, and I remember people asking, "Are you okay?" the whole time. It was one of those. And the first set might as well have been forgotten, but I will say, I jumped back into consciousness around Mike's song. Totally remember it. Piper, Circus, and then Roses was like a slap in the face. I was like, yes, I'm here now. And then a long Wikipog, too long, but great 97 Fish to end 97. But you asked about the gag, and honestly, I didn't either didn't quite get it or just laughed along waiting for it to hit me. It never really did. The balloons are cool. I actually have one of those hand-painted super balloons still.
Well, I agree with you about the gag. They've had so many memorable gags over the years. And I think maybe that's why I did phrase it with, do you remember the gag? It was kind of, you know, this one, it seemed like it was a great New Year's Eve show. It was a great New Year's Eve run. But the gag itself, to me, always seemed almost like an afterthought to them, you know, that's usually not my take on the gag. But this one always seemed like a slight miss to me. Although it's, you know, better than filling up the Boston Garden with more balloons than massholes, I suppose. But still, the visual of seeing that thing pop is the first thing that comes to my mind when I think back on the show, and like the graphics they had on the side of it. But it's when I listen back to this set, it's very rare that I ever have any comment on a maze, but this particular maze is holy shit, what's going on? It's a must listen. And then the rest of the set is for, you know, popping balloons.
They, I mean, ending the set with a pretty raucous Loving Cup is a great, great way to go out. And I feel like in some ways this New Year's run made me think a little bit more about like the ups and downs that energy-wise the band must be going through when they're playing four nights in a row, you know, like by the third set of the last night, like they must just be
exhausted, you know? Like, I think that maze is like, I read a comment on Fishnet, which was like, just if you haven't listened to this maze, it was kind of painful, and I thought it would never end. And I think the band was relieved when it did end, which I think is a funny comment. Unfinished.
Yeah, I thought that maze was amazing. So there you go.
So yeah. This is, I mean, it's a crazy set, and there's a tweezer in there too, which was, you know, I think not something that you go back to all that often. But I want to ask you guys, because we're getting close to the end here, but we should talk about the encore. And I do want to introduce something that I said on social media the other day, which is that maybe we just like get rid of encores, because a few times I've been at shows recently where like the band was about to run out of time, so they just play a long second set. And, you know, I think you get like more of a jam at the end, and encores are like, you know, like we talked about Rocky Top, you know, it's like, okay, you play a 3-minute song and then like, we all know what's going to happen for the most part, unless you get a 12:30-97 encore. This one was a multi-part question. New York, New York here into Tweezer Reprise. First time they played that. What did you guys think of that? And also, what do you guys think about where we are in human history with regard to encores?
Let's invert that for a second. I want to talk about encores, and then Tom, I want your take on the New York, New York, which I thought was a wonderful statement, you know, perfectly placed. But RJ, here's the thing about encores, and it didn't even occur to me until I heard your lovely monologue on it a second ago. And that's that, you know, over the years, sometimes encores do seem like, you know, gratuitous and also unnecessary. And I have seen bands like the Disco Biscuits and other jam bands say we're about to run out of time. Instead of doing that, we're not going to walk off. And, you know, and then there's other bands that never do an encore. Electric Beethoven never does an encore because encores tend to be less than an hour long. You know?
And Beethoven never did an encore.
Yeah, exactly. But there are. So and then Primus sucks. The whole reason why people say Primus sucks is because Claypool said, you know, encores are so ridiculous that he wasn't going to do one unless the entire audience was yelling about how the band sucks to egg him on, you know, get him to come back on stage. But with Fish, however, I've always thought that Trey was a master of setlist composition, right? On his good nights, right? Where he can tell a story. He knows how to tell a story through the arc of a set. And another thing that he does so well that complements that, and this he always nails, and that's that he kind of knows what the audience needs and how to give it to them. So for instance, when they're like that show, and I don't believe I'm drawing a blank on it now, but the show where, and it was a tab show where the balcony was swaying and it was dangerous, and Trey decides he knows what to do. Instead of ending the show, and he's going to play a sit-down tune where that everyone's going to sit down and stop dancing, you know? And he kind of just knows how to do that. And the encores, when you're at the end of a Fish show, especially a super high-energy Fish show, right? And you're just, you know, the type of show where you know everyone's going to be high-fiving the security guards on the way out, right? After that, you can't just send 20,000 people out into the streets of New York City in that crazy mindset, you know, like it's just like, what are you going to do with that energy? So that's the whole point of you have a few minutes of, oh my God, you know, like make me normal again. I can't make a complete sentence. Where's my friends? We got to get going. But before we get going, we know they're going to do something. But you also know that chances are they're not going to do, you know, something like a creamy Black Eyed Katie Sneaking Sally is, you know, or, you know, Frankenstein. They're not going to do something. It might be Bug. It might be, you know, which I love as an encore, by the way. It might be Life Beyond a Dream, which I also love as an encore. And one of the reasons I love those songs as encores is they're such great comeback into your body, you know? And so even Rocky Top is great because Rocky Top is a great little tune, but it's also like, it doesn't leave you in the stratosphere. It brings you back in a way that like you're ready to now to go out and do whatever you're going to do after the show, you know? So
I'm going to agree with Benji. I kind of need those two breaks, even though like the second break, the break before encore is, you know that it's sort of a downer sometimes, cause you know that it's just a short little goodbye coming after that. But you know, sometimes it's not, sometimes it's incredible, but I think Trey also kind of likes the, you know, you see them bow after every set, a full bow. And I think Trey kind of harkens back to, this is a show. This is like something like, you know, like when you see Gone with the Wind, a movie Gone with the Wind, and it has like an intermission. It like kind of reminds you that they're trying to be like a play, like, you know, a play that you might see on the stage, you know, performed by real actors. And it's kind of, I think Trey still has that sort of feeling. And I also agree with Benji that Trey knows what he's doing. He's crafting it. And the encore is very much part of the whole construction of it. So we're conditioned, we're Phish fans. So the encore is part of our upbringing.
It sets your expectations, you know, because now you know, okay, we have 10, 15 minutes left. They're going to do one or two songs and it's going to be great and we're going to enjoy it. But then like it sets your expectations. Although talking of expectations, I don't think anybody expected them to do this New York, New York, you know, encore. That I did not call that one, but I loved it. And it made a lot of sense. You know, they're in New York City on New Year's Eve, last night of the year, you know, they're down from Penn Station, Times Square, you know, and so they're in the heart of New York. Of course they're going to do it. Tom, what do you think?
I sometimes have sort of not cringy, but sometimes don't like it as much because it makes a joke out of Lawn Boy when Paige kind of does the lizard lounge kind of walking, singing sort of lounge singer thing, Vegas kind of act. But I got to give Paige credit for this one because he nails it. And the crowd singing along almost like, you know, it's overwhelming. And they ate it right up. And it's like, New York, we're here. We're a band. We belong here. And we're in New York. And then at the end, when he stood up, he got off the keys and stood up, the crowd flipped out. And it's kind of like he's tipping his hat to Sinatra and the nightclub aspect. And right at that moment, I felt like we were all in the nightclub. And I loved it. So yes, a thumbs up on that one for me.
It also kicked off their Phish New Year's Eve tradition, really, because even though they had played there in 95 and then they, you know, and they had played there previously. And after this was the first, after this night, Phish runs at on New Year's Eve at MSG were the standard.
Last word, RJ, thumbs up on the Sinatra.
Yeah, I mean, I have to go back on my encore thing because you guys basically made the argument that if I don't like encores, then I don't think Trey knows what he's doing. So I guess now I do like encores. Thank you, everybody, for all the encores.
What do you think of Juice encores?
Let's not talk about that right now.
Oh, my gosh. We're not allowed to talk about Goose on Undermine, but they're really good.
That's going to do it for us, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us for this four show mini hit, and you know, where we took apart and dissected and hopefully reassembled Phish's New Year's 1997 run. We're going to finish out the season. Yes, the season keeps going with the final four shows of fall 97. Again, moving around in time in the DeLorean, the April 98 Island Tour. Is that correct?
It is.
Yep. But first, Phish embarks on their spring 2023 tour. So follow them down to the Pacific coastline if you dare and give your flux capacitor a break. We'll see you on the islands, long and road, when we meet again. Until then, never forget that Undermine is brought to you by Osiris Media. Executive producers are Tom Marshall, RJB, and Benji Eisen. Edited by Eric Limarenko. Mixed and mastered by Matt Dwyer. Production assistance from Nick Sejas. Original music by Amar Sastry. Art by Mark Dowd. Thank you, everyone.
Osiris.
Hey, everyone. This is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week, I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the one-hit thunder or were nothing more than a one-hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week. So pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.